I like to look at discipline as how do we teach our children what we want them to learn? And what does the method by which we teach them? So that I basically look at discipline as giving life to learning. Some of you may have seen the little two-page summary that's been hanging on one of the boards under the trees at the plaza, or the patio. And it says that discipline is not a question of winning or losing. We're not in a battle. What we are is attempting to give life to learning to our children so that their life may be enriched, so that they may feel more capable of doing the things that they need to do. Our purpose is to guide children and to build their consciences, their self-control, and their self-esteem. And how we deal with discipline basically affects all of that. Some parents will say, my child was so obedient, so well-behaved all through, and now that she's turned 13 or 14, I can't say a thing to her. She's always off with her friends. Well, probably nothing's changed very much. The child has become very used to listening to that outside voice, only now it's not yours. It's her peers or his peers. Relying on what somebody else tells them to do all the time can build them up for what you don't want them to go to. And that's relying on all their peers to determine what they're going to do, how they're going to feel, and what their role ought to be, what they are themselves. What we really want to do as parents who are concerned about our children is to teach them how to think, not just what to think. We want to model what we hope they might accept as important things to think about. And that's how we model and live out our lives. But we also have to teach them how to think and how to go through some processing of experiences that they have so that they can learn from those experiences and not have to relive them again over and over again and suffer the consequences. Children of all ages. Dreiker says children basically misbehave for four reasons, and I think we all fall into these. And the four basic reasons are, can anyone know these? Get attention. To get attention. Next.
Fatigue.
Well, that may be one of the impinging factors. And the fatigue may act out in the fact that they're tired and they want your attention or they want you to do something with them. It may go back to that. We can go. The next one is power. You can't make me do it. Or you can tell them five times and they don't do anything about it. That's basically a power play. Their goal is, I'm going to see how long you're going to keep at it before you make me really do it. How much power do I have and how much power do you have? It's like the teacher says, Sarah, why does it take me five times to remind you to do anything before you start to do it? And she says, well, whenever my mom wants me to do something, that's how often she tells me. Revenge. Usually as in a response to power, I'll show you. And then the last one is inadequacy. Using inadequacy as an excuse. There are others. As you get into the teenage years, you'll add a couple of others. And for the teenagers, you get peer acceptance, you get superiority, and you get excitement. I want to see what it's like to do it. These are basic. And it's if you begin to look at your friends or your partner or your own adult siblings, you may recognize when you fall or they fall into these categories too, what we do to get attention. So one of the basic things to begin with as we deal with the issue of discipline is to look at what is that underlying goal? What is the child really trying to tell me? What is the child really trying to get at? And you may be able to head them off at the pass. If you know that they're going to be tired or hungry, or if, as the younger ones, in preschoolers, maybe even school-age kids. I shouldn't do any age segregation on this. When they come home from school, they come home from playing, they come home from doing something very active, and there's going to be whining, there's going to be fussing with their siblings, whatever, you might tune in. Is that attention that they want? They really want to have, you know, I've been away, I want you to know I'm back again, I want you to appreciate the fact that I'm back again, and how to be able to give them that attention before they demand it. And you end up putting them down. Kids will work to get attention in any manner, whether it's positive or negative. And what we want to do is to give them as much positive attention rather than negative. Negative attention generally labels. And there's a marvelous little book out by Sydney Simon. It's put out by Argus Press. That's called Caring, Feeling, Touching. It's only about 90 or 100 pages. He said he's discovered he can sell more books when they're under 100 pages than he can if they're over. But he talks about hungry skin, that our skin is hungry. It needs feeding, not from specialized lotions that you spend a fortune for in the store, but for touch, that positive, caring, warm, fuzzy kind of touch that makes you feel good, that is comfortable to you. And if kids don't get that positive attention, that positive touch, just as you as adults, you'll do something to get some other kind. And most often for what happens with kids, it doesn't happen as much with adults because there are some laws or restrictions against that kind of physical or violent touch of shaking, hitting, pushing, shoving, spanking, paddling, patting the behind, whatever you want to call it. That's basically negative attention. So discipline, giving life to learning, teaching kids how to think, not just what to think, that helps with conscience development, that helps with that development of inner control, that they can begin to answer themselves inside. I don't have to wait for mom or dad or the teacher to say, you shouldn't do that. Don't. Wham. I can say it to myself, I could do this, it would be fun to do this, but if I did, such and such will happen. And if I don't, maybe such and such else will happen, and that might be better. So that we can build conscience development, build moral development within them, build their own inner control. I think it's also important not to waste energy in blaming children. Why'd you do that? You shouldn't be doing that, the kind of guilt load that we can put on top of them. But to say instead, well, I can't allow you to do this, give your limit, give your rule, because, why? And not just because I said so, because I'm your mother. That's okay too, but we want to give them something more so that they don't then say to the younger ones, you do this because I'm bigger than you are, or I'm your bigger sister, or I'm your bigger brother. We want something more as a reason for why this particular thing should or shouldn't be done than power. If we want to teach them to be powerful people within themselves, that takes self-esteem. If we only want them to use power on the outside of how they can move people around for their own purposes, then use power from the outside. By showing your power. We want to model, we want to show them a good model for their use. Another important thing is when we give praise and we say, I'll love you so much if you do such and such for me, which then implies if you don't do it, I won't love you. And you get people who, you begin to raise children who will only do something because they get a payback, rather than that's just something that needs to be done. Or that they're afraid of losing your favor, that I'm okay only if I do X, Y, but I'm not okay if I do Z or Z. How to help them feel that what we want to deal with in discipline is their behavior. That person behind that, the you, the they, are okay. They're creatures of God. They're they're created by God, which means they're good. God, I like the button that says, God doesn't make junk. And we've got to remember that with our kids, even when their behavior is not so good, that they're still okay. That as a child of God, we live under His forgiveness. Our children ought also to live under His forgiveness and our forgiveness. Why negative methods aren't very helpful. Let me go quickly through this and then see if we can come up with our 34 possibilities, our options, the tools for your toolkit of parenting that can provide more positive reinforcement of teaching kids how to think, giving life to learning. What are some of the negative methods that we frequently use? Criticism, sarcasm, put downs, teasing, a variety of verbal abuse. That's the abuse that doesn't leave scars, that teachers or other adults can't see as wounds, sores on the outside, but hurt just as much on the inside. And that does absolutely nothing for helping the child develop that givenness of, I am okay, I am a child of God. It only tears it down. So criticism, belittling, sarcasm, put-downs are all very harmful, and I wish we could have some kind of magic thing that just does away with them and you never remember what they are. And kids, as you see children playing with each other, you'll see them using it on each other. And it's like being in a nursery school or a daycare, and you see children acting out in the play corner, the little house corner, and you begin to, or even up in your own house when your child may be playing with another child or so, and they begin to act out mommy, daddy roles, brother, sister roles, and you begin to realize how you may come on to them, you begin to hear words that you use coming back at you in their action and play. If we don't want children to be sarcastic, criticizing, put-downs, blaming other children, then we need to give them a model also. And I think it's important to remember that we live in a country that feels democracy is very important. Democracy in our government, and I think that government, that importance of democracy is valuable to imitate within our own home, to model it. If we feel it's so important for our government, that such a huge portion of our national budget and a portion of our national debt is due to the heavy cost of armaments to keep our democracy, then we ought to be training our children within our home to live in a democratic society that begins at home first. And that means just because I'm mom or just because I'm dad, really shouldn't carry a lot of weight. Instead, I can't allow hitting because it hurts. I can't allow hitting because it may cause injury to someone. And I won't allow other people to hurt you either. That I respect you, you're an important person, but we have some limits. I have to limit myself. I want you to limit some of your behaviors and action also. And most important of all, this does not build up self-esteem, which is really very, very important. Withdrawing love and affection from our children is really a very cruel response, also a form of emotional abuse. I won't love you if you do that. And I can remember my brother-in-law, who I think is a very, very kind, caring person, and I think his oldest child is a daughter that he really feels very pleased about, proud of, loves very much, but I also recall him one time saying to my niece when she was about 12 or so, God won't love you. And I want to say, don't say that. God loves you. God forgives you. Your dad loves you and he forgives you. He doesn't like what you're doing right now, but he loves you and God loves you. Love should be unconditional. Not, I love you so much more when you do. I won't love you quite as much if you won't. God loves us. He doesn't like what we do at times, but God loves us. And we need to show that unconditional love to our children. In Canada, we have a marvelous set of cartoons, and I'm not sure you have them here, too. It's called, It's written by Lynn Johnston, and it's a family, a mom, a dad, and an older brother, and a little sister.
For better or for worse,
thank you. And Michael was doing all sorts of mischievous things, and he was knocking down Lizzie's blocks, and he was throwing something, and he was doing all sorts of things. And finally, Mom comes and says, "Michael, to your room. It's time for bed. I think you're too tired." So he grumbles all his way up to bed, and she says, "Good night." And he looks up at her with a soulful face and says, "Aren't you going to give me a hug and kiss me good night?" And she says, "Frankly, Michael, when you do some of the things such as you've been doing, I don't feel very much like kissing you good night and being kind." And he looks at her and says, "But that's when I need it the most." Tug, tug at your heartstrings. Well, physical abuse, punishment, verbal abuse, emotional abuse creates an atmosphere of fear and feeling that I'm not very worthwhile. And I don't think we want either of those to be the bottom line of our parenting role with our children. Most important of all, it doesn't help children to learn self-discipline. And when we deal with some basic reasons for why we don't deal with spanking or hitting or the physical abuse, and let me just set out some basic reasons for that, and we could, and I'll hope to have some time at the very end as we finish our options that we can deal with some of your questions or concerns about the whys and the wherefores. Some basic reasons for not spanking, hitting, paddling, whatever, is that it sets a poor example. If you're having difficulties with a sibling hitting, with one of your children hitting a sibling, and you want to stop that kind of interaction among your children, then we need to look at what we're teaching them. If we're disciplining them by hitting, we can only expect them to learn how to deal with their feelings of frustration and disappointment by hitting. And what it basically teaches is that when you're angry, hit. Now, I could very easily live in Sweden, which has had a no-spanking law, would you believe that, a national no-spanking law for over 10 years. That's not to say that our children, who are now 22 and 25, were not hit on some occasion, but each of them, and I think both my husband and I could count the number of times that we probably used this on them without having to take off our socks and using our shoes. Each time that I may have spanked, I recognized shortly after that it was more I was out of control than my child, and I needed to take my child in my arms and say, "I'm sorry. It wasn't your fault. That was my fault, and I need to get back in control of my feelings. Let's try to start all over again. I'm very sorry. I cannot allow you to do such and such, and this is what I need to say," and not use a spanking. I've had moms ask me, "When do you begin some of this?" And my response is, "When your child comes home from the hospital." They won't understand your words, but they will. You'll begin to recognize the kind of voice that you use, and you'll want to use a more softer, kind voice, because the infant only responds to the tone of voice. Frightens if you use a startling voice. Smiles or coos, or at least looks at you when you use a soft, gentle voice. So you're telling them something about your voice, and you're getting in control of your own voice. It gives you a lot of practice on what you want to say when they do begin to understand words. And you're more practiced and more ready for it. If your children are beyond that stage, begin now. It doesn't matter. You can pick up the pieces. You can change your mind, and you can change your actions, and you can just identify it by saying, "I realize what I've been doing may not have been the most helpful. I now have some other choices, and I would like to offer your choice, one of your options. Try a new way." Explain it. Spanking, whatever, is a form of violence. Doesn't sound any better to say, "Do you want a spanking?" or "Do you want to be hurt?" It's hurting. And I believe I've probably come at this non-spanking feeling on a couple of, for a couple of reasons. I think most of us parent the way we were parented. And I can remember in my family, I was the youngest of four, two older brothers and an older sister, that I can recall when my brothers were paddled with a strap by my father. And my brothers were dear to me. I would tag after them. I did more things with them. I was very much of a tomboy, and I was always outside with them. I lived on a farm. And I would cry for them. And I think that told me something deep inside. I don't think hitting is very nice. My older sister did not have very good health. And I think my brothers got that kind of discipline, really punishment. I wouldn't call that discipline, punishment. They changed when it came to her because she was a very frail, fragile youngster. And by the time I came along, they had had to do different behaviors with her, and I reaped the benefit of that. I'm sure I was paddled at times too, but I don't remember that. And I know that whenever I do parenting groups, I have people that will say, but I was spanked when I was a child and I turned out okay. And I can't argue with that. I don't want to argue with that because I don't want to put you down. I want you to feel you're okay. That's important. But I'll venture to say it was the loving that went on and a variety of other things that really helped you turn out okay and not the fact that you were spanked. I don't know of anyone who has ever spanked, paddled, or hurt into being a better human being. You learn certain things, but I think you also learned a lot of other things through other means that were not as memorable. You remember the spanking, and you're okay. It can be habit forming. You do it without even thinking, just like the person at the breakfast table. We think that's the way people expect us to discipline our children. Only I don't want to use the word discipline when it comes to spanking. It's punishment. It does not teach us how to handle anger. Most adults have learned not to hit other adults when they're angry. And we need to learn that lesson with children too. Just because they're littler doesn't mean we can use less kind, more harsh methods on them. It's basically meant to show power, and I think there are other ways of setting limits and helping children to learn control than by the use of power. Because then we teach them power gets you certain places, and they'll use it back on us, and we won't like that. It's not helpful to them. When we use spanking on children and we say, I'm doing this because I love you, we're also telling them, we're helping them to get confused between love and violence. And that may be why we're having such a much higher level of abuse in families now than we did before. Quite unconsciously, somewhere along the line, we've been told that love and physical violence go together, and they don't. Most people who show abuse in families were abused as children themselves, and they didn't understand the difference between love and violence, and grow into adulthood confusing affection and violence in relationship. So I'm doing this because I love you is never a very good reason for using hitting, spanking, or whatever. Basically, the underlying fact is that children are not for hurting. Grown-ups need to be the helpers and not hurters of our children. In most schools, hitting physical abuse is not allowed. And we want to help them to learn other ways of dealing with the problems that they come up against. So, what we really want to teach children is through a means that can help them to say, I like myself, I can think for myself, And there is no problem too big that I can't solve for myself, or I can't be helped. Children need to know limits, they need to know love, they need to know care, they need to know forgiveness. And they need to know that they're a child of God that says, I'm okay. So let's go now to what some of the possibilities are, 34 options. Some of you may want to take notes on this, others may just want to pick up the tape to see what these 34 options are. Some positive, helpful tools for behavior management. First, basic, acknowledge and appreciate positive behavior. Now that may not sound like discipline, but it is. I was telling someone last night about a recent experience, experiment that I heard about in a school system where they took out all the children who were extreme behavior problems in the third and fourth grade classrooms and put them all into separate classrooms. Can you imagine? How many of you are teachers? Can you imagine being assigned to a classroom that has all the behavior problems in it? And there was a teacher and an assistant. I mean, that's a quick way to go crazy. Or to get out of teaching very quickly. Or to hate kids. And they just said, try to catch kids being good. Whatever. If they have a smile on the face, say, I like your smile. If they're sitting in the chair saying, I'm pleased to see that you're sitting in the chair getting ready to do some work. Before they start to do something negative. Don't give them attention for negative behaviors. The teacher said at the end of the first day, children were already modifying their behavior, except for one or two. They couldn't find anything positive to say to them. So the researcher said, that's okay. Don't search too hard. Just every now and then look over at the child in the seat and say, I'm so glad you're here. It's nice to have you be a part of us. Can you feel very much like wanting to say that with a child who's been a terror all day long? At one moment when they're not a terror, to just say, I like you. I'm glad you're here. Notice I'm saying an I statement. I'm not saying you're doing very well or you're being a good kid today. That kind of label is a little difficult, and you do that with somebody who's a behavior problem and they're going to have to squeeze out from under it very quickly, and they'll do something bad just because that's too gigantic a label for them to carry. At the end of the second day, when they began to do this with the ones they couldn't find, they began finding some things to say positively. Oh, I'm glad you've got the right page open in your book. I'm delighted you didn't stick your foot out in the aisle to trip so-and-so when you walked. You know, to get a positive affirmation for doing something okay. We so often take good behavior for granted, don't we? We expect it, and we do. We should. It's nice to expect it, but it's also important to appreciate and to recognize it. Tell them what you like. And that's the second one. Let child know what you expect. Be clear and direct in stating your limits and expectations. Tell your child what you feel, what you expect, what you value, what you appreciate, what you like. Describe is a very important word to put into your vocabulary and into your toolkit. Tell what you don't like. Tell what you do like. Describe. And describing is very specific, looking at the behavior and describing it, rather than labeling it. Very different, great difference between description and evaluation or judgment. A description says, I don't like being interrupted when I'm talking. Of evaluation or a judgment is, you're rude. You're a bother. You're bothering me. We want to own that description. I'm being bothered by your interruptions. So let the child know what to expect. For instance, people are not for hitting, rather than you're a bad child for hitting. This takes the focus off the child and puts it on the misbehavior. Tell the child, number three, tell the child what he or she can do instead of just telling them what not to do. I remember somebody telling me very early in my parenting role, it's important to tell them what they can do rather than saying, don't run. Children never listen to the first word, and all your child will hear is, run. And then you get madder because they're doing what you don't want them to do, but they're doing what they thought they heard you tell them to do. So it's more important to say, walking, please. Or please walk. If they miss the first word, they miss the please at least, and they'll hear it walk. It's important to tell them, if they're hitting someone, you know, I can't allow hitting or hitting is not allowed, tell Tommy how you feel instead of showing him. Tell him in words. Number four, redirect. Whenever possible, if you have to redirect an activity, they're doing what? They're pounding on a glass tabletop. Glass tabletop might break, you don't want that, but they're having a great time. Give them something that they can pound on. Here's a box that you can pound on that won't hurt. It'll be softer to your hand. It makes a different noise. What kind of noise does it make? Let's get a kettle. If you're feeling very good, you're in cheerful mood, no headache, you're feeling very good, you can even give them a pot and a pan from the kitchen, which may be a little bit louder. Redirect whatever that activity is. If they're starting to write with a felt-tip marking pencil on their leg and you don't want them to have that all over, find them something they can mark on. Let's mark on this box. Let's do crayoning at the table. Redirect to where it is allowed rather than on a white sofa or on their bed where it can get on their new bedspread or whatever, wherever you don't want them to do. Another one is have positive expectations. That's similar to the first, catch your child doing good, and describe what you like or feel. Some of these are important to use together. I expect you to remember that all paints are to be used on this table, on this paper. The wall is not for painting. And I expect you can remember that the paints stay here. Don't use labels. I feel strongly labels disable, and I think as you think back through your own experience, you may recognize the times that you were labeled for whatever reason, whether you wore glasses or whether you were slim or whether you were heavier or whether you stumbled a lot. I heard someone come by through the patio the other day, early last week, greeting a child in the morning with a cheerful, cheerful greeting, and then says, good morning, how are you, my skinny one? And I thought, oh, and the child sort of and walked off and really didn't pay attention. And I think it was more, part of it might have been they weren't ready to be cheerfully greeted that time in the morning, but partly that was there was a put off by being labeled skinny. Good morning, my cheerful one, or good morning, my child, good morning, whatever positive thing you want to say, but don't label. Often children feel that they have to live up to the labels that they've been given. So if they're the boss, or you're my whiny one, or you're my crabby one, or you're my goody two-shoes, any of those too, they'll tend to find all sorts of things that go wrong with their siblings and be the tattletale, and you try to figure out why they're tattling so much, because you've really reinforced a certain label that they have to live up to. So be careful of labels that we put on our children.
But you're implying that positive labels are helpful?
It depends upon what kind of positive label. If you've got a friendly label that says, my care bear, somebody who's caring, that's okay. But my fat little bear. And even sometimes my cheerful one, you may not always feel cheerful. And you may want to recognize that You can say, my child who looks cheerful now, that's describing what you see. And it's not a label forever. I recognize you're cheerful now. I'm glad. Or I'm glad you're happy this morning. That's, the morning may last 5 minutes, it may last 5 seconds, it may last 5 hours, and be okay. 7, offer choices instead of threats. Threats are like I dare yous. You remember when you were a kid? Somebody says, I bet you can't. Or don't you dare, and you wanted to. For instance, you might say you have a choice. You may turn down the volume on the TV or find something else to do. Child doesn't turn the volume down, waits for you to say it the third or the fourth time. If you want to break the child of that waiting, reminding, reminding, reminding habit, the best way is then, they've passed a period of time, the TV volume has not been touched, to go and turn the TV off and say, I guess you've chosen to find something else to do. I didn't choose. Well, I asked you to turn the TV off, to lower the volume on the TV so that I can hear my conversation on the telephone or wherever we're talking. And since you didn't do it, I assumed you've made your choice of finding something else to do. Maybe you can try to put the TV, try again at a later time when you're ready to keep the TV at a lower volume. To let them recognize they have responsibility. If you want to raise a capable, responsible child, they need to carry through on their own responsibilities and not have mom or dad or a bigger brother or sister be the heavies and always bring down the wrath of God on them or the wrath of the parent on them. So you also allow democracy. There are some choices that you have. Yes?
Kathy, you are always so calm when you say this, turn down the TV or this. Now what happens, like, okay, well, you've made your choice. Okay, and they just go bonkers. I mean, this is reality. Okay?
Yeah.
What do you do then?
I guess you're not happy about that. Part of an important thing, and it may sound very crazy, and they'll look with shock back at you, but acknowledge their feelings. Okay, you're really upset that I won't let you continue listening to the radio. I did offer you a choice. And I expect someone to listen to the choice that I've offered and to recognize our needs as well. You're giving them some information, which is another one of the options. Remember I said none of these are going to work magic all by themselves. You may have to combine a couple. And recognize they may have a child temper tantrum, but there are times that we have adult temper tantrums. Can you recognize the last time you had an adult temper tantrum? You may not have been lying down on the floor kicking your feet and arms, but you were mad, upset, bothered, frustrated, bewildered, hurt, whatever. And what is most helpful in that kind of situation is to have somebody recognize your feelings and not put you down for them. We want to keep telling our children what they ought to feel instead of recognizing what they may really feel. And you might say, with as much control as you can possibly manage, and you may have to take a minute or two to count to 10 yourself, and to recognize their feelings. You really don't like to have to take the choice of the consequence of your choice. Another option that we have here is to help them process what's happened, to look at in a sense of using the broad explanation of it, you do it much more simply, but help them look at the experience. I gave you a choice. To either lower the volume or to find another activity. When I don't hear you responding, I guess you've chosen. Now, perhaps you were thinking I was going to give you 3 or 4 more times, reminders, and I want to change that and to have, so I don't have to waste all my energy calling you down or reminding you or scolding you or yelling at you. I want to get out of that role. So when I tell you something, I'm going to tell you once. Make sure that, you've heard it. And that's another thing that we need. That's another option in here. I'll get to in just a minute. And that I expect you to be able to respond to that, that you make your choice and that you live with the consequences of your choice. If you had chosen to turn the television down, you could still be listening to it. Since you chose not to, I assume you're ready to find something else. And when you feel better, you can find something else. And you, when you think you're ready to come back and listen to the television at a proper, at a volume where we can all still be able to think, we'll talk about turning it back on again. You may talk, if you're really upset and it's gone on, you may then have to do, I'm going to overlap on something, you may have to acknowledge your own feelings, state your own feelings, what you're feeling. When I give you a choice of whether the radio stays on, television stays on blaring loud and nobody else can hear, and I see nothing happen, I really feel as if I'm not worth listening to, or I really feel as if I don't exist. What's the feeling that you have? I feel discouraged. I feel frustrated. I feel irritated. Get in touch with your feeling. Because what's the effect on you? Because I can't think, or I can't hear so-and-so talking. That's the actual concrete effect on you. And notice that all of this, we're not putting them down, we're not blaming, we're not labeling them, we're not criticizing them, we're not condemning them. We're giving them information, we're sharing our feelings, we're describing a situation, and we're letting them know the effect that it has on me. Nothing happens then. You may yell your expectations. I expect people to be courteous around here. You can yell your values. I value I value people listening when people are being talked to, if that's a value that you have. If you're ready to explode, it's unrealistic to say, for you to say to them, and it's not connecting, it's not together, it's not congruent, to say, I am very angry. No one's going to believe you. But what's also important is to recognize that anger is always a secondary response. And if you want to read another good book that helps you get in touch with your feelings, it's one of the books by Augsburger, Caring Enough to Confront. Some good things in there about getting in touch with your own feelings. I've not seen an iceberg before, so, and maybe you haven't either, but let's just pretend this is an iceberg. And how much of it's above the water? Well, not much of it. 10%, something like that. If we want to put anger up here, some people can get very much in touch with their anger. Some people in their growing up have been told anger is bad, terrible, horrible. If you're a Christian, you never get angry. Good girls don't get angry. Good Christian boys don't get angry. And we may stuff it. But if we can get in touch with our anger, to recognize what are some of the feelings that really produce that anger. Anger is always a response to another feeling. I'm angry when I'm hurt. What are some other words? What are some other reasons why you feel anger?
Rejection.
Rejected. I'm angry when I'm rejected or when I feel rejection.
Ignored.
Ignored. Okay.
Powerless.
Frustrated.
Put down.
Disappointed. And we got all of those dis labels: discouraged, disheartened, disappointed, disgusted, disrespected. You can get in touch with a lot of them, some others. I help children to get in touch with their feelings. Feelings are okay. Feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings aren't judgeable. We have a choice as to what we do with our feelings. Feelings don't automatically go into us and come out pow in a behavior. We have a choice as to how we deal with those feelings. We can put them into a behavior which then becomes judgeable. You may be very angry, upset, bothered at someone. You may not go over and hit them in the nose. You may go over and say, I really feel hurt when I hear such and such or when I see you do such and such. You may decide not to say anything and you just say, well, forget it, consider the source. You may internalize it and it just grows and festers inside and somebody else will look at you cross-eyed and you blow up at them. And it was what that last person did may be very insignificant, but you've gotten so much stuff gathered together, it's that last straw that breaks the camel's back and you explode. And you need to get in touch with where your feelings are and what you're doing with them. So we need to understand what our feelings are and to express them before they, while they're still small, before they escalate into extreme anger and explosion.
I still think, I've worked with so, you know, going through this whole thing and explaining, you know, holding them on your lap, okay, you know, you're angry, you know, we're going through this whole thing of why they're angry, and they're still not settled down. I mean, the kind of thing when you say, you know, take a 5-minute time out and they're out of that chair, you know.
900 times.
You know, and a lot of these discipline things, they sound absolutely wonderful, and then you try to put them into practice, and it doesn't happen. So I'm just wondering, okay, now what's the next step? I've gone through all my feelings, I've explained to them why they're angry, tried to settle them down, they're still not settled down. Then what?
Yeah. What are some of your expectations? I expect, and we may be giving, we can acknowledge the feelings of anger. We don't have to fuel their behavior with the fact, okay, you're angry, you can act this way. We can say, I can understand you're very, what's a feeling other than anger? So we don't have them tune in so much to, okay, since I'm angry, I can do this. But I can understand you've been feeling frustrated, rejected. The other kids won't play with you and you want to, You keep knocking down their blocks or you keep kicking them or hitting them. I can't allow you to kick or hit, to hurt, and I won't allow them to hurt you. You really would like to play. So another option is to allow them in fantasy what you cannot allow them in reality. So that's another possibility to say. You really would like to be able to play with them. You want to find a way that you can do something that they're doing, and it may be something too complicated for the younger child, and that's part of the frustration. You really wish you were a big kid that could ride the two-wheeler, and since they won't let you because your feet won't reach the pedals, it's disappointing. You really want to be able to do it. I would wish you had a two-wheeler that you could reach easily and that you could run up and down the streets. You wish you had one to allow them in this fantasy. To maybe insert some humor in there. Let's make up some rhyming words with it, or let's give all the kinds of wishes that we would like. If we had 10 wishes, what would you wish? To change, you can't change a mood, change a mind. Change what they're thinking about. Give them some other diversions. And it may carry on with something else. Find some bit of humor in it. Let's make up a story about what would happen when you're on a bicycle. Let's make up a story of what you would really like. That's diverting, trying to think of another. Or when you get big enough to reach those wheels, what can you do with them? Where will you go for a ride? How would you ride? And you may even have a sheet up on the refrigerator where they can write down who has something to say, that there may be an agenda, that they build an agenda.
Oh, yeah, we have an agenda past and present and future. Mm-hmm. And then part of it is that when they feel like they have a problem, they can write that down, and then that's...
That gives them some power.
They have that power that they can address it at a later time. and they know that it's just not going to, mom's just not going to take the feathers and ruffle everything smoothly.
And you're all going to sit out there and listen to mom or dad tell you what you've been doing wrong.
And it's really helped Peter a lot.
And he's how old?
Well, now he's 11, and it was from the time he was 4, and the doctors would say, well, you just have to teach him that some things aren't socially acceptable, but he's a good kid, and he'll be all right. But it was ongoing and ongoing, and his acting out, and his body got bigger, and this worked.
So family meetings that can help a child feel that there's some connection, there's some power, there's some a forum for being heard, that it's a safe place, that I can share my own needs and my own feelings. I can find a way, and what happens in family meetings is another one of the options, is that you can do problem solving. So a family meeting combines some of these things, and it's a very important, it may seem like a strange form of discipline, but it is an important form of discipline. That it combines acknowledging of feelings. It combines some sharing, describing of what you feel or see or like or want or need. It's some sharing time. It's being accepted, having your feelings accepted, getting in touch with the feelings and knowing that it's okay. And it's an important form for using problem solving, that they learn the basic skills of problem solving, which, you know, probably one of the best things that can be learned for adult life. And we think, okay, you'll learn it somewhere along the way, but for kids to begin to learn this when they're in preschool even, how to solve a problem, rather than by using power. Another important word that you used was consistency, that the family meetings are something that are held very regularly. It's not just as mom or dad see that they have a need, there's been a big problem, or somebody's really done something serious, so, oh, okay, let's now have a family meeting. But they're regular, and that they may be very positive. They may not be just forums for disagreements or difficulties, but they're also, a lot of times, it's important, a lot of times, to start out a family meeting by a positive. Let's say, whether there's a focus on one person for that particular meeting, let's each say something positive about that person, or everyone in the family says something positive about everyone else in the family, that you go around and give warm fuzzies or warm pats to each one. I liked it when you helped me with my math, a brother may say to a sister. Another one say, I appreciate it when you waited for me after school. It can be something very simple as that, or I liked it when you put your hand on my back when I was feeling pretty bad because of my report card, and you said, I still love you. So that's combining several of these other things, some positive affirmations as well. Question?
I don't know how old the child, and we'll talk about this some more when you're out, and she seems to be responding to that really well instead of going from one thing to another and just not being able to deal with that anger.
And what you're really doing is giving him some positive attention, acknowledging his feelings, helping him, and may even be helping him to process that experience,
right.
Rather than having that discipline be a punishment. You're isolated, you're by yourself. But to say, in a sense, I still love you, even though I can't allow you to do this particular thing. Let's think about some other ways, and you may get to the point of saying, okay, during these 5 minutes, and timeout is another option. Timeout should be short, no more than 5 minutes for a child under five, and maybe another minute for each additional 8 year beyond. Sometimes they say, go up to your room for half an hour. Half an hour for most early school age kids is a lifetime. And you can get a lot of resentment built up during that time. And you don't want resentment. You want them to process the experience. And to maybe, when you have them do a timeout, to say, let's think about how this began and what might be done another time so it doesn't happen. And you won't have to have the timeout. You can enjoy your play instead.
Instead of putting a time limit on timeout, what about just saying to them that you're timed out until you can make the decision? How you want to deal with this in the family. And then you can come back.
That's another possibility, to let them determine the time with the underline saying, when you decide how you're going to be able to deal with this in the family, come on back and tell me.
Because I'll use the let same them. Thing on myself. I'll tell the kids, I'm going to time myself out until I can come back.
That's, that's an important, that's, thank you for sharing that. That's an important modeling point, to say that even mom has to get back, or dad has to get back in control of what they're doing, and that you can have some very strong feelings, and to say, I need 5 minutes of time out to think about what I'm going to do about this, so I'm going to go and sit at the table and think for 5 minutes. Or I'm going to go up to the bathroom, or I'm going to go up to the bedroom. As you may notice on this, I've suggested that timeouts for preschool kids not be up in their rooms, because you also want the rooms to be a place that they'll go cheerfully for bedtime. And if you make it a place of, punishment or avoidance or confrontation, it's not going to be a happy place for bed at night. And as one mom said, she finally told her, she had her child go for a timeout, and she didn't want to send him to the room. She just heard me say something about this. So she said, go look out the window for 5 minutes and think about such and such. And he came back after 5 minutes, and he said, I really feel much better. There were so many nice things to look at outside, and I saw a squirrel and a bird and so forth, and his whole mood had changed dramatically. Because the world was still alive out there, and he could feel alive inside. Couple minutes. Solve problems together. That's look at what you feel and what you need. What are some possibilities? That's explore alternatives without evaluating them. Then the third step is to evaluate. Okay, I can allow this, but I can't allow that. The child might say, I'm not going to do this. The kids will laugh at me. So accept that. You want this to be a win-win situation, not a win-lose. And the important step is to when you make the decision as to what several alternatives you might be able to choose, and it's never just one, you might fit several together, to decide who's going to do what, when, where, and how. Divide the responsibilities. Be sure you know what you expect of yourself, what the child expects, and so forth. And then decide, when should we come back and check and see how it's working out? That you can come back for an evaluation, a review, so to speak. If it's not working out, okay, let's go back through it again and figure out. Modifying the environment, that may be adding, subtracting, systematizing, planning, simplifying, rearranging, scheduling the environment so that certain things aren't going to happen. Using natural or logical consequences, for instance, if the child is late for dinner, constantly late for dinner, and you say, okay, this is the next time you're late, you're going to have to either, you decide what relates. If you can let them say, okay, no lunch, no more food until the next meal, no child is going to starve in that short of time, or you're going to have to eat the meal cold, don't heat it up for them, or you put away all the dishes and so forth, and they have to make whatever they want and clean it up, or as long as you're not here for the meal, the things will stay out, but you finish cleaning the table off, depending upon their age, and do the dishes and put everything away. They may do that once or twice, and then they'll be there for dinner. That they realize there's a consequence. Acknowledging child's feelings, as we said earlier, helping the child get in touch. Listen yourself and get in touch with your own feelings and express your feelings if you're really bothered. The child is happy at that kind of play, throwing the ball in the living room, and you can't stand it because you know something's going to get broken. You've got to own those feelings and say, I can't allow you, or when I see the ball being thrown in here, I'm afraid that my figurines are going to get broken. The ball, and then offer a choice, find something else to play with in the living room, or go outside and play with the ball. You have a choice, and carry through on that. Don't wait 5 or 10 times. Review the experience or problem together to discover what happened, why it happened, how it came about happening, what might be learned from it so it doesn't happen again. That's called processing it. Say you wish, allow in fantasy what you can't allow in reality. Decide in advance with the child a particular signal when behavior is not acceptable. Might be a hand signal. With our kids, if they would do something, I would go. If they'd happen to look at me and they'd recognize what I was. 2 more minutes. Temporarily withdraw or alter a privilege until a child is better able to handle it in a responsible fashion. I can't let you use the until you figure out a way for you both to share. When you decide, come and tell me. Hold a child to prevent destructive behavior. Maybe sing to him, comfort him. That may calm him down, calm both of you down. Use timeout, we talked about that. Physically guide the child where he or she needs to go in a direct but not hurtful or vengeful intervention, which may speak louder than words. Remove child from misbehaving situation. Do gently but firmly in a way that shows respect to the child. Describe the situation, your limits and your feelings. Direct to another activity. Use role reversal. Ask the child what the child would do if he or she were a parent, were the parent and you were the child. You might get a lot of good information from him. Give information to them. Milk, when it's left out on the counter, goes sour quickly. Take action. If the child is fussing a lot when you take him shopping, next time you get ready to go shopping, somebody else is around. Child says, why can't I go shopping with you? You say, you tell me why. Let them begin to understand what their actions, that their actions have consequences. Model the behavior you see and hold a family meeting to discuss house rules. Remember that spanking or other physical or verbal abuse gives child a model which you may not want to see repeated on siblings or other people. Spanking shows power and generally generates unhealthy guilt, lack of respect for both parent and child, and wish for revenge, including own use of power. Child best learns love and respect for others by experiencing love and respect. This doesn't mean you let children do anything they want. Limits and consistency as far as possible are important, but done in a loving, teaching, respectful way.